Hey, y'all. Sam Sanders here. My new podcast is called It's Been a Minute.
That's another way of saying, let's catch up. Every Friday, I'll sit down with two guests, smart talkers from inside and outside NPR, to catch up on the week of news and culture, everything.
If you can't stop watching the news, but you're also exhausted by doing that, this show is for you. Don't miss out.
Find It's Been a Minute now on the NPR One app or wherever you get your podcast. Thanks.
Insecure is about love. It's about friendship. It's about work. It's about sex. And it's about figuring out what you want all those parts of your life to look like. Before Insecure, its star and creator Issa Rae had a successful and highly regarded web series called Awkward Black Girl. The following she built there helped make Insecure one of HBO's most highly anticipated comedies when it premiered in the fall of 2016. Critics loved it, and it found a loyal audience. Now the show is back for a second season. We find the lead character, also named Issa, still struggling to move on from her long-term relationship with her boyfriend, Lawrence.
I thought you said you didn't want Lawrence back.
Of course I want my man back. I was lying.
Issa's best friend, Molly, played by Yvonne Orgie, continues to have problems of her own.
I can't just roll up to the partners and be like, hey guys, so I accidentally noticed that you paid this white man more than me.
If Insecure is about any one thing, it's about what to do when you don't know what to do. I'm Linda Holmes, and we're finding our way on this episode of Pop Culture Happy Hour. Before we get started, let's go around the table. I am out at NPR West and in D.C.
I'm Stephen Thompson with NPR Music.
I'm Glenn Weldon. I write for the NPR website.
And joining us from New York is the co-host of the new Gimlet podcast, The Nod, Brittany Luce. Hi, Brittany.
Hi. Thank you guys for having me again.
Yeah. So tell people who might not know yet, what is The Nod?
So The Nod is a podcast that is about black culture, and it focuses sort of on, like, we like to say, like, the unsung heroes and, like, you know, maybe the undertold stories, as well as some of the biggest moments in black culture. Like, we've done stories on everything from the Black Bachelorette to, like, polo boosting teenagers called the Lowlifes, who basically, like, popularized polo in a lot of ways, to Beyonce YouTube conspiracy theories. So we are talking about it all, and we're having a lot of fun so far. So hopefully people listen.
Absolutely. Recommend subscribing to The Nod. But Brittany is with us to talk about Insecure, which is Issa Rae's show. I want to go first over to Stephen. So talk to me about your feelings about Insecure, Stephen.
Oh, I love this show. We've talked about a lot of big comedies, you know, about single life and some of the disappointments and humiliations attached to it, and they often tend to be very, very big. This is a smaller show. It's more of a comedy of directionlessness than of kind of the wacky humiliation of something like chewing gum. Mm-hmm. As such, like, its laughs are smaller, but the show is more lived in and relatable, and I think really wonderful. Acted with some supporting performances that I really want to talk about.
Well, and we will definitely get back to that. Glenn, where are you on Insecure?
I think I loved it in the first season. I think it's really found itself in the second mm-hmm. season. It's mm-hmm. found its voice. It's found her voice. Some of the stuff that was a little shaggy for me in the first season is very tight now. The work stuff is, I think, working a lot better. The relationship stuff is weirder. It's more specific to this situation, so it works. Mm-hmm. I also think the show's had an opportunity to get out from under the cultural baggage it might have been saddled with through no fault of its own, but whenever a show comes out like this, this happened with Girls, this happened with Master of None, it happened with Atlanta. It's like, what is this show saying about, in this case, black women millennials in the aughts? And right. So there's a lot of, it's kind of generates all these think pieces. And, you know, this happens with shows with women and minorities. It doesn't happen with a show like Crashing. You're not reading a lot of think pieces about, you know, the state of straight white male comedians in the aughts, because there's a lot of shows like that, and they're all saying the same thing. This is specific. It's its own thing. And I understand why we do it. Whenever a show like this comes out and it makes its way through all the gatekeepers it has to make its way through, it's natural to kind of say, why did this make it through? Why aren't there more shows like this? Now it's had a chance to get out from beyond that, and instead of everybody looking at it from 30,000 feet, we can just enjoy the show. We can tell that what this show is saying about black women is that these specific black women are very, very funny. The show also made a really good choice. It upped Natasha Rothwell, who plays Kelly, up to a series regular mm-hmm. in the second season. That just pays all kinds of dividends. Yeah. She's such a great character, and it just really rounds out the show. So I'm in.
All right. How about you, Brittany? Insecure.
I love Insecure. I would agree. I felt like the end of the first episode of the second season was stronger than almost every episode of the first season. Yeah. And that's not a dig. Mm-hmm. I just thought it was so nice to see like progression and like incorporation of feedback. It seems like internal and external. I just felt like everything has gotten so much tighter. And also too, like some of the laughs definitely are going to be smaller on Insecure, as you said, than on a show like Chewing Gum. But there are, I don't know if it's like they've changed something about the pacing or maybe like the, I think maybe just as the writing has gotten better, there are certain jokes that have, I've had bigger laughs in the first few episodes of this season. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I used to have a different podcast called For Color Nerds. And one of the things we talked about, I think on that show was like, sort of like a, like the lack of black female screw ups that you can't really, I'm enjoying that there are more and more of them now, specifically in comedy with a character like Tracy from Chewing Gum or Issa from Insecure. Just seeing a black woman who is not Olivia Pope, who doesn't have it all together, like can't get the dude, can't get the job, lives in an apartment where she tries to have like a classy Thursday night wine party and she's the person who provides the Carlos Rossi. Like, I love that she's that person and I love that that's like the character that the show is leading with. I absolutely love it.
Yeah. One of the things that I really like about kind of the arc of the show is it is so specific about different relationships that she has. Not just her relationship with Lawrence, who's her long-term boyfriend in the first season, but obviously her best friend, Molly. And Molly, to me, that friendship is so important because they allow it to be fragile.
Yeah.
It's not a relationship where you feel like, you know, no matter what happens, they're always perfectly there for each other and they always speak each other's unspoken language and all that business.
Mm-hmm.
They can fight. They can be really mean to each other. And I think because that relationship is vulnerable, it's more significant. And I think in general, Molly is really interesting to me because sometimes she's likable and sometimes she's really not.
Well, Molly to me is like, I think what makes her such a great comedic character is that she is closer to like the Mary Jane character from Being Mary Jane, played by Gabrielle Union, or she's closer to an Olivia Pope, but in real life. Those shows are fictional, you know, and dramatic because that person doesn't exist. And like, I think that Molly is such a great depiction of like the veneer and how comfortably some people can wear that veneer of like super on point, professionally, like, you know, amazing black woman who has all of this, you know, stuff together, but also her personal life is a complete mess. While that makes for really compelling drama on a lot of other TV shows, it's like, I think it makes her such a great comedic character because like she goes, she's so unlikable, so deeply unlikable at sometimes. And she's also so, at certain times, completely self-aware. Like certain times when she makes references to like class ascension that she's experienced in her lifetime, like she's completely self-aware of who she is. But at other times, she's completely unself-aware in ways that are painfully funny, but also just painfully painful. It's like she's kind of a send-up in a certain way without being a caricature.
Yeah. And I want to talk a little bit about the relationship between Issa and Lawrence. And if you are, particularly if you are still early in the first season or haven't started watching it, maybe skip ahead a little bit because I do want to talk about the status of that relationship. Over the course of the first season, that relationship is damaged because Issa cheats on him. And I'm wondering whether, is there such a thing, do you think, as like a team Lawrence and a team not Lawrence? Is like a team sure. I want her to get back together with him and a team I want her to move on from him.
I mean, I suppose you could split that between team Lawrence and team Daniel, but I'm not sure that many people are on team Daniel at this point. I do think that performance by Jay Ellis as Lawrence is such a richly rendered job. The way he is introduced as one thing and evolves into another thing, and both of those characters, Issa's character and Lawrence's character, are given opportunities to be lovable and awful, and to evolve constantly. I love that he starts as one thing and you think, okay, this is kind of a bad boyfriend.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm.
And then, but then he gets to be so much more, and that actor gets to exude incredible amounts of charisma in one scene and vanish into the couch in the next. Yeah. I think his is a particularly terrific performance.
I mean, that's the advantage of shaking things up in the second season, where now he gets to be in different situations. He's not always in the same role, which means we get to see more of him in different situations and more sides of him, which really, really, really opens up the series in a way that I think is really good. I also like that she is feeling some freedom to experiment with the format. So it's in a way that is similar to Master of None, Atlanta Girl sometimes. Mm. But she doesn't need to innovate this thing because the details here are so on point. There is a very early scene in the first episode of the second season where she's waiting to meet Lawrence and she is staring into the mirror and practicing how she's going to greet him at the door. This is a setup we've seen a million times. Mm-hmm. There is nothing new here, and yet there's so much new there because it's just funny. She nails the details, and that's what I think the show is doing. It did it great in the first season. It's just found something in the second. Mm-hmm.
A couple of detail-related things that I really do want to fit in. The fact that they use real company names when they're talking about Best Buy, when they're talking about Rite Aid, and when they're talking about Enterprise.
Yeah.
I think it's important and lends to itself to the realism of this show that it talks about these kind of real brands in that way. The other smaller detail that I love so much about this show is in the character of Tasha. And Tasha is the kind of other woman love interest of Lawrence. And that character, played by Dominique Perry, who is, I think, so good, that performance could so easily, that character could so easily have come down to like in Girls Trip, the other woman who's just this cartoon, this total cartoon character of like, you know, a man stealer. This performance is so interesting to me. She's almost like Issa and Molly if they wanted way less from life and their relationships. Mm. And at first you just get like, okay, this woman is very basic. But they allow her to have, I think, a much richer character that complicates these relationships. I've really been drawn to that character.
I think that she's kind of gone on a journey. I agree. She starts off as this woman who's really pressed to hang out with this man who's already expressed that he has a girlfriend.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously then the whole Daniel thing happens. Issa and Lawrence break up. That's the first call that Lawrence makes is to Tasha in a uniquely memorable scene.
Yes.
At the end of the first season. But I have been really impressed with how, like you said, how much texture she's been given, how much life she's been given. I found myself at certain points not necessarily rooting for her because like I feel like I'd already been set up to kind of dislike her, but I felt like my loyalties in certain scenes shifting.
Yeah.
Not necessarily between, you know, Issa and Tasha, but more so like between Tasha and Lawrence. There's one particular scene where after Lawrence has made, you know, a confession to Tasha that, you know, she didn't particularly like.
Yep.
They're sitting on a couch together. He says this thing, and I felt the pain that she was feeling.
Yeah. Another thing that I think is very different but similarly nuanced in a way that I like is Issa's situation at her job.
Yeah.
Because when they first introduced this nonprofit where she works that works with kids, it felt a little bit like a spot-on parody of a lot of your well-meaning white people.
Mm-hmm.
And they were mostly, you know, kind of condescending toward the kids that they were trying to quote-unquote help. They drove Issa crazy by wanting her to kind of explain anything that was, like, outside of their own experience. And there are a lot of wonderful scenes about that really find interesting ways to convey her pent-up frustration with that. But at the same time, the more she has stayed in that job, the more you have gotten to understand that those people genuinely are well-meaning in a way that's more complicated than if they all just turned out to be complete morons all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Her boss there is legitimately somebody who I think, you know, believes in her and wants to support her in her work. And her friend, I've been really interested in her relationship with Frida, her coworker.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who is sort of a clueless person, but is a nice person mostly.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a really there's not trust in that friendship, I would say.
Right.
Like, Issa doesn't trust her in anything like the way that she trusts Molly or her genuinely close friends. But there's an affinity between Issa and Frida that is pleasant and kind of, they're able to support each other even though they don't have real deep trust, if that makes sense.
Well, this is a show that is very much about coming to terms with life being not quite as good as you think it could be.
Mm. Yeah.
It's not that things are terrible. Mm. It's not that Lawrence is a terrible boyfriend. It's not that working at We Got Y'all is a terrible terrible job. It's that she's at these crossroads in her life where she's constantly having to ask herself, is this good enough? And that's true of a lot of characters on this show.
Yeah. I think it is. So as it moves through this second season, what are you looking for, Brittany? What do you want to see more of from Insecure?
Well, first of all, there have been scenes with Molly and her therapist that are incredible and so true to life. As a Black woman who is a huge advocate of therapy, and also I've had a few different kinds of therapists, but I've had the same one for the past almost five and a half years. And she's a Black woman and who's like, you know, a little bit older than I, maybe 30 years older than I am. It makes such a difference. And the conversations that Molly has with her therapist and how she's able to really converse with her in shorthand and not have to spend a lot of time educating the person who's supposed to be helping her.
Right. And she has that conversation with Issa about how different it is.
Exactly. Yeah. Those scenes are incredible. So I'd like to see more of that. I've really been enjoying seeing Molly in the workplace. I think a lot of the things that she's struggling with are so familiar to so many Black women who go to work, which is a lot of us. Something that I have liked is I'm obviously only partway through the season, but this idea of Issa being really, she's not good at a lot of things in the realm of the show, but something that I think that she's better at than she realizes is being on her own. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's already been demonstrated that she's a lot better at it than Lawrence. So far, just I love the post-Insecure Twitter conversations. Yeah. And I've noticed that something that people were circling around at the end of the second episode in the like Twitter After Dark Insecure conversations, just noticing how bad Lawrence is at being alone and how many men are bad at being alone and sort of use different women as life rafts to sort of get from one spot to the next in life. And I think that being able to see that the way that Lawrence has kind of gone back and forth between Tasha and Issa, I think that'll be really interesting. And also seeing Issa maybe start to rely on herself a little bit more and realize that, like, she doesn't need anybody. And based upon her, like, her Tinder conversations, she may not find anybody. But she doesn't need anybody. And I think that's going to be really important.
All right. Well, I will be curious to hear what all of you think of Insecure. Come and find us on Facebook at facebook.com/PCHH or tweet at us at PCHH. When we come back, it's going to be time for our favorite segment of this week and every week, what is making us happy this week. So come right back.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from ZipRecruiter. If you're looking for top talent, with ZipRecruiter.com, you can post your job to 100-plus job sites with just one click. Let ZipRecruiter's powerful technology match your job to the right candidates and use their simple dashboard to find the right hire. That's why 80% of jobs on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate in just one day. Try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/happyhour. Support for Pop Culture Happy Hour and the following message come from Sunbasket. Sunbasket makes healthy cooking easy. They send pre-measured ingredients that are organic and non-GMO, along with easy-to-follow directions directly to your door. So you can skip the grocery store and still prepare meals in just 30 minutes. Choose from paleo, gluten-free, lean and clean, and vegetarian options. Sunbasket has meals to fit every busy lifestyle. Listeners get 50% off their first order at sunbasket.com/happyhour.
Welcome back to Pop Culture Happy Hour. It is time for our favorite segment, What is Making Us Happy This Week? Stephen Thompson, what is making you happy this week?
The fact that Jason Bateman has just announced on Twitter that on August 8th, they are beginning production for Arrested Development Season 5. Now, yeah. Glenn is giving me a look.
You know, We'll see.
And I know what Glenn is thinking because I've been thinking it too. I think season four is very, very, very flawed.
Mm-hmm.
The pacing is very slack. The inability of the show to get more than two or three people in a room at the same time in season four. What I'm reading about season five is that it's going to be a murder mystery and that they have gotten the entire cast in one place. And I feel like the minds behind this show, particularly Mitchell Hurwitz, these are very smart people. They know what the criticisms were of season four. I am feeling myself being very excited about the show, perhaps because of the lowered expectations that I bring to it from season four. So lowered expectations always make me happy. But I love Arrested Development so much. And if it's not good, I've still got seasons one through three. And if they turn that ship around, wow, what an incredible treat.
Thank you very much, Stephen Thompson. Glenn Weldon, what is making you happy this week?
Okay, listen to this cast list. Aubrey Plaza, John C. Reilly, Molly Shannon, Cheryl Hines, Paul Reiser, Anna Kendrick with Rob Delaney, Adam Pally, and Gary Marshall. I would watch anything that that cast does. I would even watch a frickin' zombie movie, and I hate zombie movies. Well, turns out they made a zombie movie. It's called Life After Beth. And it's written and directed by Jeff Baena, who co-wrote I Heart Huckabees. It's an indie zombie comedy of the kind that you've seen before and you'll see again.
A zomedy.
Yes, it's a zomedy, and it's not going to blow you away, but it's cute. And these performances, I mean, again, you assemble a cast like this, it's going to have some really great performances. What I haven't mentioned to you is who the star is, one Mr. Dane DeHaan. Now, last week we talked about him in Valerian, where... You get the sense watching that film that it's like watching a penguin on land, right? He's just slipping and falling and he's waddling and he just looks exhausting. I had a sense that in the right part, this kid would be just slipping into the water.
This 31-year-old kid.
Right. In this film, Life After Beth, Dane DeHaan plays a schlubby, lovesick, feckless teen, and it's like, boom, slips into the water. Graceful, elegant. He is a penguin in the water in this film. This is the role that he was made for, and he's great in it. He's arguably better than the film. I mean, I would watch Aubrey Plaza do anything. I would watch her chew gum, and in a 2012 film called Safety Not Guaranteed, I think it pretty much did that. But this film, Life After Beth, it works. And after you see Valerian and the City of a Thousand Planets, go see this film. Rent this film.
After you inevitably go to see Valerian.
One of the six people who have gone to see Valerian.
Yeah.
Then see Life After Beth, and you'll see just night and day.
Thank you very much, Glenn Weldon. Brittany Luce, what is making you happy this week?
What's making me happy this week? I have never really been a super huge fan of Tyler, the Creator. I've always appreciated his music. Something I had always wondered is, like, when is he finally going to age out of the whole overgrown boy thing? Mm-hmm. His last album, I think, came out in 2015. It was called Cherry Bomb. I really liked it, but it felt kind of experimental and aggressive. I mean, you know, as somebody who's highly therapized, it felt like he kind of had a little bit of a wall up. Even though I loved the album, I was just waiting for some more. And I feel like with Flower Boy, I'm finally getting to know who, like, Tyler Acoma actually is, as opposed to sort of alter ego or character that he uses that feels more public facing. And it's really nice to get to know the person really behind the character that he's been performing for so long. Gotta shit, gotta shit, gotta shit, gotta shit for the Gaudian. That is what I was hiding. That was where love I was in. Ain't no reason to pretend. Gotta shit, gotta shit, gotta shit, gotta shit for the Gaudians. The feelings that I was Gaudian. Heavy on my mind. All my friends lost. They couldn't read the signs. I didn't want to talk. I'm telling my location and I ain't want to walk. Truth is, since a youth kid, thought it was a phase. Thought it'd be like the freight poof. Gone, but it's still going on. I would highly encourage anybody to listen to it. I really, really enjoyed it.
Thank you so much, Brittany Luce. Making me happy this week, HBO has a new series called Room 104. Mm. Room 104 is an anthology series, but unlike the shows like Fargo and American Horror Story, it's not a season-by-season anthology. It's an episode-by-episode anthology, similar to like what The Twilight Zone was and stuff like that. And the gimmick, and I don't think the Duplass brothers who make this show would object to having it called that, the hook or gimmick of this show is that all of its stories take place in the same hotel room or kind of motel room. And the series is really genre mixing. The opening episode is called Ralphie. It stars Melanie Diaz. She plays a babysitter who goes to this room to babysit a kid who clearly she doesn't know. If that sounds creepy to you, if that sounds like maybe something creepy is about to happen, you are right. And a point that one of my friends made when HBO paneled this show at Press Tour this week was that it's a solid good show as an anthology series, but it is a really exceptional project when you hear the Duplass brothers explain. They do a lot of the writing, but then they bring in directors to do each episode. And they want to use it partly as a way for people to experiment and try things and break into episodic TV directing. Room 104 on HBO, the first episode is Ralphie. It's creepy as all get out. And that is what is making me happy this week. And that brings us to the end of our show. You can follow all of us on Twitter. You can follow me at NPRMonkeyC. You can follow Steven at I Dislike Steven. You can follow Glenn at GH Weldon and Brittany at BM Luce. That's BMLUSE. You can follow our producer, Jessica Reedy, at Jessica_Reedy, and our producer emeritus and music director, Mike Katziff, at Mike Katziff, KATZIF. Mike's band, Hello Come In, provides our in and out music, which you're tapping your foot to right now. So thanks to all of you guys for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thanks to all of you for listening, and we will see you next time.